Shalom, damn it! This is Rabbi Saul Solomon, so happy to be here with you and with our special guest on this episode of Dave's Gone By. I am so happy that Dave asked me to do this interview with a wonderful and topical and clever singer-songwriter, Dan Byrne. He's been doing his thing for 15, 16 years now. He's got a bunch of albums, a ton of really good and interesting and occasionally Jewish music, because that's the most important thing. And so he's in a car somewhere driving, I don't know where. I hope your hands are on the wheel rather than on the telephone, but I do welcome Dan Byrne to the neighborhood. Welcome, Dan. Hello.
Hello, Rabbi.
Shalom, shalom to you. So where are you driving right now?
I'm driving up to Madison, Wisconsin right now, leaving Chicago.
Why are you driving to, I assume you have a gig, as they say, as you musicians say, a gig?
That's the terminology.
Because there's really no other reason to go to Madison, Wisconsin. This we know. How is the weather over there?
It's not too bad, Rabbi. It's this time of year up here it could be worse. It's not snowing right now, and we're doing all right.
This is good. Let me ask you a pointed question. How was your bar mitzvah?
How was it?
Yeah. Did you like it? Was it terrible? Was it good? Were you scared? Tell me about your bar mitzvah, Dan Byrne.
Well, it's an interesting question because I think really that's kind of what got me started in all this because, you know, all that preparation for just one gig seemed a little, I don't know, I kind of wanted to keep going, you know, I wanted to have a tour, really, but it kind of stopped, and, you know, I thought, well, let's make t-shirts, and, you know, we can keep this thing going, but it kind of ended there, so I think I thought, well, maybe there's some way that I can keep this thing going, so eventually, that's kind of what happened.
Actually, I did a three-city Haftorah tour. It failed miserably, but I enjoyed it immensely. It was good. Of course, the concert was only 7 minutes long, but still, you know, I was proud.
Yeah.
So,
how were your cheeks after that? Didn't all the old women squeeze your cheeks? And, like, I imagine they get calloused after a while.
Well, you should see what cheeks they were squeezing, but we'll get into that later.
Uh-oh.
Damn it. So when you say you wanted to take it further, did you mean not only performing, but also performing in a Jewish-esque sort of way?
Well, I don't know that I thought of it, you know, necessarily in those terms. I think it definitely is probably part of what I do. It seeps through for sure.
But you're not Orthodox or anything. I mean, how much do you observe? Are you kosher? Are you not kosher? Do you kill people? Do you follow the commandments? What do you do?
I break as many commandments on a daily basis as possible.
Oi! Oi! Because?
I know. What's that?
Because, why do you break the commandments? Why is it so important to break free of these rules?
Well, it just kind of happens. I sort of have a contrary nature, and they tell you to do something, and you know, certain people have to skirt those rules, so I guess I'm one of those.
Do you take the Lord's name in vain?
Sometimes, yeah.
I never ever do that, goddammit. I never do that. That's a terrible thing to do. Oh, my God.
I don't think he would mind.
Do you covet? Do you covet your neighbor's ox? Or perhaps her ass?
I do some coveting.
Coveting is...
Yeah.
Coveting is normal. Have you killed anybody?
On occasion. Have I killed anybody?
Yeah.
My lawyer just advised me to, no.
That was an interesting answer to that question, my goodness. I'm afraid to ask about the adultery thing, but, no, it's okay. It's none of my business, but I hope you had fun if you did. So, the name of your band, Sometimes, is the International Jewish Banking Conspiracy. This is funny to me. Do people take that the wrong way, and how did you choose that?
Well, I was inspired by a book that Dick Gregory wrote,
Wait, he's a Schwarzer. Wait a minute. How were you were inspired by Dick Gregory, the Schwarzer, to write about Jewishness? How is this?
Well, he wrote a book, I can say his book was called Nigger, and he said in the introduction, he said to my mother, now when people use that word, they're just talking about my book. So I thought, well, in that spirit, when people talk about the international Jewish banking conspiracy, now they'll just be talking about my band. So,
oh, that's very funny. I like that. That's very good. And do you still tour with them, or do you tour solo, or what is your current combo?
Oh, I have different groups. I have a group that I play with sometimes called Common Rotation, and I do it by myself, and I have various sidemen, and...
I do it by myself every morning, but I don't like to talk about it. Sorry, continue.
Yeah, well, that's... Yeah, it kind of does change from time to time.
Do you prefer a band or do you prefer solo? And again, I'm only talking about music at this point.
About music, we're talking about music.
Yes.
I like both because I like the freedom of playing all by myself, and I like the sort of support in the music and the different colors of different instruments. So I kind of go back and forth.
Dan Byrne, do you remember the first song you ever wrote?
Not really. You know, I started doing it when I was a little kid, like everybody else does. And most people stopped, and I just kept going. I don't know. Wrote means, to me, it means made up. So I don't know what the first song I actually wrote down was, but I think I was making them up probably before I could write anything down.
I understand that, but let me then ask, do you remember your first grown-up song? The first song that you thought, oh, I can sing this for people and make a life of this?
I don't know. You know, I don't know if there was that moment. I don't know. I really, I'm sorry,
See, this is why I asked about bar mitzvahs, because this is a pretty blind alley right here. But let me ask, when you write, is it the words first or the music first?
It's kind of both together. You know, that's, to me, that's what songs are. It's the words and music all wrapped up together. So if there's one that's first, it's I don't know, it's pretty quick. It's pretty quick. I think it's an idea, and then it's the words and music together.
Is it true, the old truism, since truisms tend to be true in a true kind of way, that some of the best songs, boom, you get the idea, 15 minutes later, boom, boom, it's done, and it's better than a song that you've slaved over for 3 weeks. Is this true?
That's true. That's a truism.
See, I told you, the isms are true.
Sometimes a song will get made quicker than it takes to sing it.
Hmm. My goodness. So, of the songs that you've written, do you have a couple of particular favorites? Ones that are particularly meaningful to you, or that you feel, oh, I was writing on all four burners, beautiful melody and brilliant lyrics?
I got a few. I got some songs that I consider like my falling out of bed songs that I could fall out of bed and play.
Such as?
There's one called Black Tornado that rolls along pretty good. And there's one called Jerusalem that people like to hear a lot. And there's one called God Said No that is about trying to go back in time and change things. And God keeps, you know, it's kind of one of those old-fashioned, Old Testament kind of, you know, arguments with God where you're actually taking off the gloves and getting in there and arguing and so on. I like that one pretty well.
I can't think of a Jew who doesn't do that with God, myself included.
Right.
Get up in the morning, I fall out of bed, but I don't fall on a song. I just fall out of bed because I get disoriented. And then I say, God, why didn't I just hurt my arm falling out of bed? This turns into an hour and a half argument, and then I have my breakfast. It's, what a life I lead. My God.
So you don't argue over breakfast, you argue and then you have your breakfast?
I argue sometimes under breakfast. It's a strange household I have. You, I'm sure, have heard the term because you write clever songs, nice songs, folk songs, topical music, and you have a certain kind of singing voice. You must have heard a zillion times the Bob Dylan comparison. Does that bother you? Are you flattered? How do you feel in relation to, of course, the perhaps greatest singer-songwriter of the 20th century, Bob Dylan?
I'm kind of bored with it, really.
Okay.
You know, I kind of moved on from it myself a long time ago, and, you know, I've been working on singing like the old country crooners, like Ray Price, George Jones, Merle Haggard, and so, you know, you can't really take people's ears and make them hear what you want them to hear, so...
Oh, when I have a sermon, I run into the pew, I grab them by the ears, I shout into their heads if they're not listening.
Yeah.
And that's what I can listen to. You know. But let me ask, in the writing of all these songs, it says on somewhere on the internet I read that you've written more than 600 songs. Is this true that you know of in your adult life?
That was probably about 15 years ago, Rabbi.
So you have written more than 1,000 at this point?
Well, sure. I mean, I stopped counting at 1,000 about 10 years ago.
You're joking. What do you write, 3 songs a day?
Sometimes. I've written 8 songs in a day. I've written 10 in a day.
Yeah,
but I don't necessarily write a song every day. You know, I mean, a chair maker makes chairs, and, you know, a song maker makes songs.
This is true, but how then do you go and you say, okay, I need 12 or 14 songs to go on an album? How do you know which are the ones to get out there on disc? I was going to say vinyl, but no more vinyl. You know what I'm saying.
Well, some people still make vinyl. You know, they're very proud of it. And it's a bit of a fetish with some people. I'm not so much that way, but...
My grandmother had a fetish for vinyl chairs, but that's quite different, I think. And the plastic that covers all the couches. I never understood this.
I think I might have met your grandmother once.
I'll ask you, well, God, when I see her in the Oilam
Haba. Remember her to me.
But,
or me to her.
But seriously, how do you know when you've written... Of course, when you're writing a song, you think it's good. So, but how do you know, is it good enough, is it lasting enough to go and be permanent, as it were, on a CD?
Well, I guess that's, you know... I mean, for one thing, you're not going to put songs that you've already made, that you've already recorded and put out, you're not going to put those on. So, you know, you're sort of operating from a, you know, every sort of season you have a new batch of things, and that's sort of what's in your target. You know, sometimes there'll be some surprises. Usually you record a little more than you need, and then sort of... see what they start talking to each other, really, these songs. They do start talking to each other.
So do you try to give your albums an individual flow? So they're not just a collection of songs, but the album itself has a kind of feeling and theme?
Oh, definitely. You know, and I mean, the way people listen to music nowadays, they don't necessarily listen to it in the order that you put it in. You know, they'll put it in their iPod and they'll shuffle it, or they'll take one song. But still, you know, for the people that do listen to albums in the old way, you're trying to tell a story, and you're trying to, you know, make something coherent.
This is true. I've been trying to make something coherent for years. No luck. No luck at all.
No luck. No luck.
Ask what, Dan Byrne, is on your iPod? What are the songs that you listen to, not by you?
Well, lately, Johnny Cash, One Piece at a Time.
That's a funny song.
George Jones, Good Day for the Roses, and Blues, The Color of the Blues. You know, these old country crooning songs.
Why are you suddenly moving perhaps away from the folk into the country, or was country always kind of your base?
No, not so much. I mean, I've always liked it, but I've definitely, I lived in New Mexico for several years, and I started listening to a lot of it then. It was on the radio when I was a little kid growing up in Iowa, and I think because it was on the radio and older people liked it, I didn't care for it as much, but I guess lately I've been, and also, you know, those guys sing really well, so it's true. A good thing to sort of learn how to sing like that.
This is good. This is a true point. Let me ask, have you gotten in your career now, which has been going on since the mid-1990s, have you met any of your idols, either in country music or rock and roll or folk? Have you sung with them? Have you shaken hands? Anybody really, really famous or important?
Oh, yeah, a few.
That's very kind. But other than, no, you know what I'm saying. Any major people or people who are not so major but have a huge influence on you and your musical taste?
Yeah, a few.
Like?
Oh.
What, do I have to drag it out of your tuchus? Come on, tell me.
Nah. I'd rather not say.
I'm not asking for very damaging anecdotes.
Is it? No, you know, that feels like name dropping, and, you know.
Well, I'll drop your name. Tomorrow I'll go around and, hey, I talked to Dan Byrne, goddammit, huh? Hey, look at me. I'll be doing that all day.
Well, you know, I gotta tell you, Rabbi, just talking to you is pretty much the pinnacle for me. I mean, I've been following your interviews and your work for a long time now, and this is really, I mean, this is what I will tell people in the next several minutes anyway.
You are more than kind. What was the motto of the Ruttles? A legend that will last a lunchtime? I always like that. Always made me laugh. Speaking of laughs and funny, if people don't know, Dan Byrne was also responsible for a great deal of the music in the very funny comedy movie Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story. How did that happen, and how did you work to write for a movie?
Well, I had written for a movie that the director, Dick Kasdan, had made some years before that, and when it was time to make Walk Hard, he reached out to a number of songwriters that he knew, and I was fortunate to be one of those, and I just kind of went to work on it, and later hooked up with guy who became a good friend and a great songwriting partner, Mike Viola, and we continued on that. And you know, when somebody asks you to write songs for a fictional songwriter, it's about as good as it gets. So I've been fortunate to be able to do more things like that since then, and it's kind of like my other job now, which I really love.
That's one. What other movies have you worked on, and might you currently be writing music for?
Well, I wrote a bunch of more things, some by myself and some with Mike Viola, for a movie called Get Him to the Greek, which came out last year.
Uh-huh.
And in that one, Russell Brand was played the fictional Aldous Snow, who once again had a large catalog of work that we got to write. You know, and then there's various things, some TV things.
Do you get to actually, and not to put you in a position where, God forbid, you're mentioning someone you shook hands with, but do you get to go to the set and walk around and watch everybody waiting 10 hours to set up a shot, or are you totally away from the actual place where it's going on?
Well, with Walk Hard, I was lucky to be. I was on the set quite a lot. Sometimes because we were still working songs, you know, while everything was going on, and some just because I wanted to be there. And in one case, I was actually in the shot at in Walk Hard when the song "Beautiful Ride" at the very end. There's a big production number, and I'm the piano player in that scene. So
I thought you were gonna
hang around enough, though.
No, I thought you were gonna tell me you were the penis that comes into the shot at one point. I was like, oh my God, there's a penis in the movie. Oi, oi. My wife was happy, but I was not. But it's not yours. I couldn't tell if it was circumcised.
No, that was not mine.
Okay, whose was it?
They got some actor. When they were looking for, they had a whole page of actors' penises that they were auditioning.
Oh God! Really? This is true? Oy, oy, oy. And did they actually do auditions for each penis, and they did 16 bars of something, or I can't imagine that. I don't know. Well, whoever it was, they stole the movie. Well, no, your songs, Dan Byrne, those stole the movie. But apart from your songs, the cameo penis stole the film. So if you know the cameo penis,
happy to share. Happy to share the accolade.
That is lovely. Your GPS is. How is your GPS doing? Is it telling you where to go, or are you suddenly wandering around Connecticut?
It's telling me where to go. I'm not sure how well I'm following it right now, but she keeps talking.
Well, so do I. That's what I do. Can I ask? Even though by the time you started writing and recording your music, the music industry had already gone through a lot of changes. The LP was done. We were into CDs. There was the internet and everything. Still, I feel there has been a sea change in the way music is bought and distributed and made between then and now. How have you coped with the iTunes revolution, Pandora, all those kinds of things?
In some ways, it's a great thing because it, allows much greater freedom to get things out and do it at your pace and do it, I kind of just keep doing what I've always done, which is write songs and record them and get into people any way that there is, I mean, it does seem to change daily, and for the most part, it's probably a good thing.
Well, certainly if you're the listener, it has been, on some level, a golden age of being able to accumulate music from way back when to yesterday. But for a performer trying to make a living, does your living basically come from the movies and you supplement it with your music? Or could you make a living on your music alone?
Well, for, up until a couple years ago, I wasn't doing the movies at all. So, I mean, mostly I've just made a living from my music alone. A lot of times what the movies does is mess up my taxes, really.
Okay.
People tell me it's a good problem, but I mean, I love having both things, and I think doing both things makes me better at both things, really. I think the rigor and the discipline of writing for the movies, I think it makes my own writing better, and going out on the road and touring and doing it every night for, several months, I think that's a lot to bring to the table when I'm working on a movie.
And do you enjoy the touring, the playing for people, the going from Madison, Wisconsin to, you'll be in Colorado this coming week. That's why we're having you on the air and so excited to have you in the neighborhood. So do you like the touring, or does, as you get older, it becomes a grind?
Well, I think there were times when it was a grind, but this run I'm enjoying a lot. I have a little girl now, and I terribly awesome. Miss seeing her and being home, but I don't have this kind of my when I'm at home, so I'm sort of taking advantage of that, while I am out here, and it's very simple in a way. I drive to where I'm going and I play some songs. That's about as simple as it can get sometimes.
Nothing wrong with that. You pick up a little paycheck and then you're off to the next. Can I ask, how did you marry a nice Jewish girl?
She's nice, yeah.
But, oh, did you marry out of the faith?
No.
Oh, Maza, how did you meet her?
I met her at a party in L.A. some years back.
So you've been married for a while, but the little girl is new, as it were.
That's right.
Mazel. Well, let me one other family question for Dan Byrne, because it also says on the internet that your parents would be pretty old at this point, but it said they were Holocaust or World War II survivors.
Yeah.
Where can you tell me a little bit about your mom, your dad, and what they escaped from and how?
Yeah. Well, my mom was living in Germany during the Kristallnacht time, and she has one amazing story where she had the key to the synagogue in the town she was living in Bielefeld, because she was practicing the organ. She was a musician, and one night she was practicing and then went home, and then in the morning the synagogue had burned down, along with all the other synagogues in the country, and she still has, to this day, the key to that synagogue. She gives talks, and she'll pull out the key at the end, and it's a, you know, dramatic moment. And that really, her father was a lawyer, and he had been working to help other people get out of the country for several years, but had sort of neglected to do it for themselves, and I think when Kristallnacht happened, that's when he really finally saw the writing on the wall and got them out of there in early 39. And they went to England on a kinder transport, my mom and her sister. So that's my mom's side. My dad's side is actually a darker tale. He was from Lithuania, and he was the oldest of five kids, and he had already been away. He had been studying piano in Paris with some of the great teachers of the day, and had come back and was a young professor in Riga, in Latvia. And but saw what was going on, and in 39 he left and went to what was in Palestine. And turned dark there, and they basically took everybody out and just shot them outside of town. So
you're talking about in Palestine?
No, in Lithuania.
Oh, Lithuania. Okay, but wait, I'm sorry, maybe I lost the thread there for a moment.
He left. He got to Palestine, but then back home, his parents
of course,
and his two young brothers and sister were all wiped out along with everybody else. His brother survived. He was a partisan in the forest fighting, and he managed to make it through.
My God, is your father still with us? Is he still alive?
No, sadly, he's been gone about 20 years now. My mom is still doing well.
Did he tell his story too? Did he go around and, or did he keep it to him, say he didn't want to talk about it?
Well, he neither one really. He would talk about it, but he didn't like make a point of giving talks. But if you know, he wasn't secretive about it.
I'm curious how you felt their experiences, your mother and your father, shaped the way they were and behaved and were as people and as mommy and daddy.
That's tough because, you know, for me it's just who they were, and I was always aware of their background and how we had come to be where we were. I'm sure it shaped, you know, what I did and what I do and all that.
Have you played in Eastern Europe or Germany, or have you done any of that area?
I played in Germany a lot. My sister studied opera there for a number of years, so I would go over there and visit her, and then in the course of that, I played over there quite a lot.
Did it feel strange, or was it just another place?
No, it always felt strange. You know, a lot of mixed feelings because it, you know, in some ways, I felt very at home there. I was comfortable with the language, and sort of the culture was like what I grew up with in my home, because really, I mean, both my parents, their first language was German, and culturally, they, you know, it was part of them. And but at the same time, you know, every tree, every old house, you know, you couldn't help but think, yeah, every street sign, you know, like that was there 50, 60 years ago, you know, what things did that tree see, you know?
It's an extraordinary thing. I can't imagine. I don't know how I would react if you put me in Germany. All I know is hopefully I would not be armed, because there would be a lot of bodies around me. I don't forgive very easily. But that's just me. Hi. Well, we're talking with Dan Byrne, and I have a happier final question for you. I know we got all sort of down and depressing there. Yeah, kind of hard not to in Germany, but...
just the reality, you know?
Can I ask, Dan Byrne, B-E-R-N, and yet you discovered, and not early on, that it's not, wasn't your full name.
Yeah, well, I knew that my dad had changed the name when he came to America, and,
How did
he,
you?
Yes. I don't think he was very happy that he had done that. Later on.
Sometimes you go under the name Bernstein rather than Dan Byrne. Is that true?
That's right.
When do you choose to use that moniker?
When I paint something, I'll sign it that way. When I make a film, I'll sign it that way. I've been doing this a long time, making music under the name Dan Byrne, and difficult to just change something sort of in midstream, you know.
Oh, of course, absolutely. But I was also getting it to the point, do you use Dan Bernstein or just the last name Bernstein?
I just use Bernstein, yeah.
Bernstein.
And I usually, when I do that, I put in an extra N. I figure, well, instead of, you know, taking something away, I'll put something back, and I'll add one more. I'll add a little bit extra.
Actually, you could be really eccentric and put the extra N on the first N, Bernstein. That would freak people out. That would be creepy.
That'd be another guy.
Oh, okay. So let me ask the final question. Sorry, I had a little bit of phlegm there. Hold on. Sorry. So, Dan Byrne, what are your hopes for the next...
Are you all right, Rabbi? Are you okay?
I'm good. I'm good. I just had a swig of Maalox, and I'm feeling so much better. What do you hope for the next 5-10 years in your life and in your career?
What was the question again?
What are your... Pay attention, goddammit! I don't do this for my health, you know. What do you hope will happen for you in the next 5 or 10 years in your life and in your career?
A few Oscars, a few Grammys, maybe the Nobel Prize, but maybe it'd be better to wait for, you know, more like 15 years, because these things happen too soon. It sometimes creates more problems. So, you know, I like to be modest about these things.
You are definitely a Jewish person. There's no question about this. Only a Jew would think, you know, if I got the Oscar, it would just be more tax problems, and things would go wrong, and all my friends, I wouldn't know if they were real friends. It's good. I don't need it. Let me just do what I'm doing. But, you know, you should keep doing, and you should be happy, and you should keep writing many, many songs a day. Like that old Andy Warhol thing, your work, it's about the work. If you write 5 songs a day, you should write 10. If you wrote 10, then you should write 15 tomorrow. you should keep writing and working and doing, because that's what you do best.
Yes.
Well, I thank you.
Well, I take that as a blessing, and I will take it upon myself, and thank you for that.
Well, I thank you, Dan Byrne. Everybody, please go see him on March 19th at the Soiled Dove in Denver. My God, that's something I don't want to see in Noah's Ark. The Soiled Dove, and then the next night on March 20th at Steve's Guitars in Carbondale, Colorado. Also, you have a CD out called Live in New York. And you've got the Dan Byrne Songbook, which is a book. They still make books. I don't know if they put it on a Kindle yet. You're so busy. It's so wonderful. Oh, do you have a website?
Yeah, just danbyrne.com.
DanBerne.com. And you should get the URL for Dan Bursting with all the different N's in it. And then you would own the world. Well, Dan Byrne, it's been a pleasure. I wish you mazel and blessings. Thank you so much for being in the neighborhood.
Thank you, Rabbi. It was a pleasure.